You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
Hello out there in archaeology podcast land. This is Dr. Alan Garfinkel. I'm the president and founder of the California Rock Art Foundation. And what we do is we identify, evaluate, manage, and conserve rock art both in Alta California and in Baja California. We conduct field trips, we have trainings, exercise, we do research, and in every way possible, we try to preserve, protect, and coordinate treasures of Alta and Baja California rock art, of which there are many and diverse. We also work closely with Native Americans and partner with them to recognize and protect sacred sites. So for more info about the fabulous California Rock Art Foundation, you can go to carockart.org. Also, I'm open to give me a call, 805-312-2261. We would welcome sponsorship or underwriting, helping us to defray the costs of our podcasts, and also membership in California Rock Art Foundation. And of course, donations, since we are a 501c3 nonprofit scientific and educational corporation. God bless everyone out there in podcast land.
You're listening to the Rock Art Podcast. Join us every week for fascinating tales of rock art, adventure, and archaeology. Find our contact info in the show notes and send us your suggestions.
Hey out there, Rock Art Podcasters, for episode 76. This is going to be an interesting one. Gloria Brooks, she is an educator and a digital nomad who's going to share how she uses Native California Indian and Indigenous cosmology, material culture, both rock art and other data sets in educating students from about the ages of, let's say, you know, the mid-level class. And she creates content for teachers. Fabulously interesting repartee. Hope you all enjoy it. Hello out there in archaeology podcast land. This is your host for episode 76 of the Rock Art Podcast, Dr. Alan Garfinkel Gold. You know me as Dr. Alan Garfinkel, and I'm the president and founder of the California Rock Art Foundation. And today we have a real treat. We've got someone who's of a different sort, who I just met actually at one of the programs that I had given. This is one on California Indian basketry. And the woman we're going to speak with is, her name is Gloria Brooks. She's the founder and director of Nature Glows eScience. And I found her captivating and very interesting. And we're going to talk about the way to use Native American material culture and also rock art in educating the young people at school and taking those materials and using them in a way that will be empowering, interesting, and educational. How's that, Gloria?
Superb.
How'd I do?
Excellent. Yes.
Superb. No one has ever called me superb lately. So God bless you.
Thank you.
Gloria and I met out in the Western Mojave Desert, out in the new California Welcome Center in the gorgeous town of Ridgecrest. And I believe, do you live in that part of the world or no?
Yes, I have a interesting story. I've been living full-time out of a converted camper van called Evergreen Queen, a Ford E350 V10 van, and traveling and down the Eastern Sierra since 2014. And I recently met a new love here in Ridgecrest, so it looks like I am going to be staying here in Ridgecrest and traveling part-time in the van together with him or solo.
It's not a bad place to be staying.
Right.
That's wonderful. So Ridgecrest is ground zero for what I call some endlessly engaging research and interesting landforms, ethnology, archaeology, many, many different platforms that all converge on this one area. And I think we had some time to sort of catch up and begin to talk about that. But maybe the way to open this, and the way I usually do this first segment, is to tell people how the heck did you ever get involved in sort of, you know, being the wanderer that you are and engaged in sort of this panoply of earthly delights when it comes to educating young people.
Yes. Well, it begins in 2008 when I became discontented with living a mainstream lifestyle, and I left my faith at the time, the church that I was in, and decided that I wanted to join an intentional community that embraced all faiths. And that was a new experience for me. And shortly after that time period, my eyes were open to connecting with the earth through a program called Kamana, which is based out of the Wilderness Awareness School in Duval, Washington. And I began taking their correspondence course, which taught me to connect with the land, similar using skills from Native Americans based on the work of Tom Brown Jr., who I believe he's still alive on the East Coast. So I started learning these Native American skills like owl eyes and dog nose and learning to use my peripheral vision, among many other skills. And that was the seedling or beginning of my falling in love with and wanting to learn more about the Native American culture and artistry. And but it's happened in stages over these last 15 or so years.
And so this whole association with the earth and with sort of an indigenous viewpoint or cosmologically connected viewpoint has now become part and parcel of who you are and what you're doing, I guess. Correct?
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, it's been a slow unfolding, really. And also I read a prayer, a Native American prayer. Unfortunately, I forget the name of it, but it's from the Iroquois where they thank the plants, they thank the animals. And in the prayer, there's something like, and together we give thanks. Does that ring a bell? I wish I had looked that up.
It sure does. No, but you know, you're sort of sharing a number of things that I've learned as I've walked along on I think it's a different path, but it's quite analogous in a lot of ways. And what I find is the more I connect with Native American heritage or indigenous cosmology, the more I learn, it buoys my own spirit. It gives me, it enervates me, it improves me, it helps me to feel fulfilled. It's really hard for me to explain to others just what this journey of sort of scholarship, but also interaction with Native people has done for me. And it's doing the same sorts of things for you, I think, in a similar way, perhaps, correct?
Yes, I can say that I've had a strong yearning in latter years to connect with Native Americans and get to know them and get to know their culture and understand their art. And I recently did a study for Native American Heritage Month back in November of 2021. And it was really the first time where I started to do some digging about the history of the Native Americans and the mass genocide, unfortunately, that occurred. And I just sob. There was a time where I was introduced to the genocide in previous years. And I remember just sitting there sobbing uncontrollably. Like, I just thought my brain was going to explode out of my head.
Exactly.
You know, we are that close to such an atrocity, you know, akin to, you know, what happened in, you know, Nazi Germany. And so my heart just breaks. Yet, look how there are so many tribes that are represented to this day, which is an incredible miracle.
It is. And I try to emphasize, I know this is naive and people tell me that I wear rose-colored glasses, but I try to emphasize or go from where we are now to where we want to be. And I've had some blessings to work with Native people that I think feels somewhat similar, trying to create ties and create relationships and build something from where we are now to where we can possibly be in the future. I have an artist who's on the board of the California Rock Art Foundation, and she's a twofer. She's an individual that has face tattoos and an internationally respected artist. And she also shares the same sort of flavor of what I'm trying to espouse. And I think that Native American basket weaver that we met together, who I'd never met before, by the way, I think shares a lot of those same feelings of sort of taking what we have and then piecing it together and moving forward. I know that my own deep dives and scholarship into Native cosmology has sometimes been, it's been difficult. It's been challenging. It's challenged me intellectually to try to understand some things that are rather unconventional and difficult to digest, especially for someone brought up in a Western industrial complex. How's that?
Yes.
Yeah. So someone who's used to going to the store and buying meat and getting things in packages and putting them in the microwave. I was raised in the Bronx, New York, until the age of 8. I lived next to PS 46 and lived in the Bronx, New York.
Wow. Only 2 hours south of me.
Yeah. I can't say that I was really ever sort of enraptured with the natural world to the extent that you may be or others may be, who are far more adventuresome than I am. Although I was able to get on the back of a mule and go through the Sierra de San Francisco and do the Grand Canyon of Mexico and visit the largest prehistoric paintings in the world there.
And, oh, that's fantastic.
And stay in a, you know, one of those things that they call tents for a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. It wasn't my cup of tea, but I did it and enjoyed it thoroughly. I really did.
Oh, that's great.
But this archaeology thing that I've been involved with for 50 years, I've camped out in the High Sierra during the dead of winter, ooh, which is, you know, wonderful as well. Or I've been in a, you know, out on the ground on top of a dry lake in the Black Rock Desert where the sun comes up and it gets to be 120 degrees instantaneously.
Ooh. Wow.
The artifacts are so hot on the ground, you pick them up and they burn your hands.
Ooh. Wow.
So life is interesting. Life is interesting. And I just have to say that it's been a ball. It's been I was out of archaeology for about 20 years, by the way, 15, 20 years. And I didn't really think I would ever go back or be able to go back, but I have, needless to say. And I'm humbled and blessed by the opportunities that it's provided me in terms of meeting some extraordinary people and having some unbelievable experiences in what I've seen and heard and tasted and smelled and loved, all the above. It's been just wonderful. So it is a blessing to sort of be involved in this crazy world of, you know, the study of indigenous people, but also as an advocate for Native people and trying to find ways to bless them.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. That's what I want to do. But I want to do it from, you know, a very sensitive and mindful manner. And I'm learning that as I go, you know, using their tribal names and, you know, just addressing them respectfully and being mindful of where they are at in this current interesting point in history.
Yeah. Try to be sensitive, politically correct, and do things in a way that will perhaps nourish their souls. And especially in the particular frame of reference that I'm in, that is never so easy as you can imagine. I always talk about you get, you know, half a dozen Native Americans in a room and you get 12 different opinions. It's very volatile. And the landscape is political. really just depending upon what particular piece of the puzzle Native people find themselves in. Even in California, of course, you've got the greatest diversity of Native people north of Mexico. There's, you know, hundreds, thousands of different indigenous entities or communities that exist all throughout California. And of course, most of them are federally not recognized, which is another interesting exercise. So you've got a layout here of Native people that are in themselves, you know, kind of combatants trying to each get a piece of the puzzle or figure out a way to subsist and live on the land in places that they've lived for, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of years, but trying to decide, how can I even earn a living? How can I compensate myself and support myself in these areas that have virtually no basis for any sort of economy? You know, just think about the corridor of 395 as an example. Yeah. So it's absolutely extraordinarily beautiful, but there's very little in the way of economic engines to tap into for individuals to, in essence, find their way and provide some sort of a compensation and employment opportunities for themselves. So that's always a challenge as well.
I see. Yeah.
So tell me more. Tell me how you have begun to sort of apply some of this material and perspective into your teaching.
So back in 2018, I was van camping in the volcanic tablelands outside of Bishop, California. And I actually didn't know where most of the petroglyphs were. We picked a road that did not have any other campers on it. And I was camping with a friend of mine at the time, mm-hmm. Terry, and her little dog, Luli. Mm-hmm. And so we chose our camp. It was on these slabs of rock. It was quite rickety getting up the road at the time. I don't think it had been graded very well. Uh-huh. So yes. My van was rocking, and the washerboard road was pretty intense. But we got to our camp. It was like the first road on the right. And we proceeded to take a hike down the path, and lo and behold, we found petroglyphs, and I was just amazed. I was like a kid in a candy shop, just taking photos and videos. Wow. And just all excited, because that was my very first petroglyph sighting experience, and it happened mm-hmm. organically. No one told us where they were. In fact, they don't tell people where the petroglyphs are there anymore, because of some damage that had been done in fairly recent years, very unfortunately. So that was the only place that we had found petroglyphs. Then fast forward a few years later, I was with another friend, and we were just hiking around. We weren't looking for petroglyphs, but we met this man, Bill Petrie, who has written a book called Sky Spirits, and he was out looking at petroglyphs, and he invited us over to observe some and to look at them. And I just snapped pictures left and right. And we just had a wonderful conversation with him. He was very knowledgeable as to interpreting, or maybe trying to interpret the petroglyphs. It was just fascinating.
And where was this?
This is still at the volcanic tablelands outside of Bishop, California.
Well, let's just hold that thought. We've used up our first segment, and then we'll continue our story on the flip-flop.
Looking to expand your knowledge of x-rays and imaging in the archaeology field? Then check out An Introduction to Paleoradiography, a short online course offering professional training for archaeologists and affiliated disciplines. Created by archaeologist, radiographer, and lecturer James Elliott, the content of this course is based upon his research and teaching experience in higher education. It is approved by the Register of Professional Archaeologists and the Chartered Institute for Archaeologists as 4 hours of training. So don't miss out on this exciting opportunity for professional and personal development. For more information on pricing and course structure, visit paleoimaging.com. That's paleoimaging.com, and check out the link in the show notes.
Hey gang, it's your host, Dr. Alan Garfinkel, for Rock Art Podcast number 76 with Gloria Brooks, and talking about her journey in understanding Native American theology, cosmology, lifeways, sort of world perspective or worldview, and sort of integrating that into her own life and her own teaching platform, and how she somehow does that as a kind of a roving entrepreneur.
Yes.
How's that, Gloria?
Yes. That's right. I'm a digital nomad, a K-12 digital nomad curriculum writer.
Wow. That is a wondrous niche to be in, I have to tell you. And that you've been able to pull that off is damn near miraculous, don't you think?
That's exactly the words I use. It is a miracle.
Yeah. Yeah. So you went and visited some more rock art, same right. Kind of location, learned a bit more about it. And then what?
Yes. Yeah, so my friend and I, we met Bill Petrie, who talked about the rock art. They were all petroglyphs. And then he proceeded to hand me his book, Sky Spirits, A Search for Meaning in Ancient Art. I actually have it here in front of me. Mm. And I thought that was really significant. I mean, someone that's been studying the rock art for decades just hands me his material.
Exactly.
I mean, I did tell him that I was a K-12 teacher and highly interested in Native American history and the petroglyphs themselves. So
what did that book and meeting Bill Petrie and some of these other experiences show you, tell you, or influence you in the way to go?
Yeah. So I thumbed through his book, and in fact, I really didn't look in his book for several years until I took a deep dive in a healing modality called breathwork, which comes from many indigenous cultures. And I wouldn't be surprised if Native Americans have used breathwork, but it's a somatic practice where using this circular breath, where you don't fully exhale before taking the next breath, you come into an altered state, and it allows one to deal with deep hurts, wounds, trauma, dreams. There's so many different things that breath work can help with. I was at the end of my rope back in 2019 when I went back to the East Coast for a year and a half in my van. So breath work came to me in my rock bottom state. And so when I thumbed through Sky Spirits, this book about petroglyphs, I was just trying to search for meaning, of course, and connections with the deep spiritual work that I had done. And I felt very touched. I remember, well, it's been maybe 6-7 months ago since I've thumbed through the book, but I thought, you know, there's just some kind of magnetic energy that has brought me back to the Eastern Sierra. It's very powerful. It's unlike any experience I've had with the land on the East Coast. For example, on the East Coast, I absolutely love New York. I love the emerald green forests and moss and grass and beautiful vegetation there, but it does not have a magnetic pull for me as the Eastern Sierra does. And I just have been thinking that there must be a deeper work for me that's waiting to unfold. And I really hope, believe that it does have something to do with connecting with Native Americans, whether it be spiritually or physically. Ideally, I would love to interact with more. That's why when you and I met Lucy Parker at the basketry right. workshop, I was just over the moon excited. Like I just, like I'd look at her and I'd like hold my breath, like, oh my gosh. Yes. I walked into the room and I started tearing up. I was like holding back tears because I didn't want to go back to that moment in time where felt like my brain was going to explode. Like, you know, like you're here, well, you're here. Yeah. You and your son are here. What a miracle that is. You know,
it is. It is. So you got an opportunity to meet a authentic descendant from the real exquisite artisans of your region, from the Kuzetika Paiute area, the Mono Basin, the Mono Lake people. And not only is she a descendant and living still in that same location where her ancestors live for literally hundreds and thousands of years, but also she's one of those rare people, only about a dozen, I think, as she shared, actively producing art forms and objects de art, vis-a-vis her expertise that incorporate the land, the landscape, the natural world in her basketry, which is rather amazing.
Oh, yeah. My mind was blown at the detail that goes into that.
I think something that I'll share with you that you may or may not know, and I certainly didn't know anything about it either. So Ridgecrest, of course, hosts an annual festival. And I don't know if you've ever attended that festival, but on the first weekend of November, for the last 6 or 7 years, they've had what they call their petroglyph festival, their rock art festival. And it was an experiment to try to see if they could brand the city with rock art and Native American themes. Mm-hmm. And they were just trying to do this. And so I came on board and tried to help them and teach them or provide them some guidance on what I thought they were trying to do. And one of the things that I know they were trying to do was to profile and showcase indigenous people and their cultures, right? Well, that's not so easy. The native people are not so interested sometimes in participating. They're rather skeptical. And, you know, and they actually had some bad press, you know, that they were being, you know, using the native themes and a sort of a continuation of colonialism and this and that. So anyways, there was all that background too. But one of the funny things was, for the last 50 years, I've been studying this thing that they call Coso rock art that exists there in the, you know, sort of the central Eastern California region, mainly on base at China Lake, but also at Little Lake and also along the eastern skirt of the Sierras to some extent. And I somehow accidentally ran across a picture, a photograph on the internet. I think it was on Facebook. And it said, "The Ram Dancers, Guardians of the Grand Canyon."
Oh, wow.
And I go, "What?" Give me a break. Who the heck are the Ram Dancers, Guardians of the Grand Canyon? You know, this is what, 2022, right? How can we have a group of Native people that are doing this sort of thing that have kept this tradition alive, you know, at this point in Western industrial development? So I said, I saw a video of them, found out that this group of Havasupai live in the bottom of the Grand Canyon. The bottom of the Grand Canyon, I'll say it again.
Wow.
And I said, how do they get there? How can they get out of there once they're in there?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
and who the heck knows them, so we can get them to come to the festival and dance. They wear the headdresses of the bighorn sheep, which is, of course, is depicted in the rock art. And so I spent the next better part of the next 2 years failing miserably to connect with anybody in this group. But then I connected with this one gentleman who I fell across by accident, who follows the bighorn sheep, right? He full time. He goes and watches them with photographic equipment and photographs them and, you know, tries to learn about their habits and habitat. And he's been helping to repair the land and transplant bighorn sheep and cause them to proliferate. All right. Well, he says, yeah, oh, wow. I think I can help you. I think I can help you, Alan. I think I know someone who might know them. I says, and who is that? He says, well, there's this woman who heads up the cultural department of the nearby Hualapai. I says, okay. So you have her name and number? He says, yeah, I got it. So he gave it to me. I called her. He says, oh, yeah, I know them. In fact, I'm related to him.
And wow.
Says, well, is it possible that they could maybe consider coming to a function and dancing? He says, oh, yeah, they do that all the time. They've gone all over the world. And if you compensate them appropriately, they will certainly be able to do that if their schedule allows. Mm-hmm. So after a lot of wrangling and angling, they came. And here they were, the men, the women, the children, like 15 of them or more. They have to take a helicopter out of the bottom of the Grand Canyon to get to their vehicles. And then they drive across from the Grand Canyon to Ridgecrest, California, to dance.
Wow. Oh, I wish I had seen them.
You will see them in November.
Oh, okay. Well, I saw two men dancing with hula hoops at the last Petroglyph Festival. So I did go.
Did
two Native American men. It was pretty extraordinary. I actually got video of it, too.
Fantastic. Well, these are the ram dancers of the Grand Canyon,
oh.
Guardians of the Grand Canyon.
Wow.
They are related to, you know, the Native, they're indigenous, have been there for hundreds, thousands of years, and they believe that the bighorn sheep are their animal-human ancestors.
Wow, that's awesome.
And so this is a religious tradition for them. And I guess the reason I brought that story up is because it's so amazing.
And, it is.
You know, and parallel to yours, correct?
Yes, sure.
So please continue. I didn't mean to interrupt the flow, but that's what came to my consciousness when you're talking about trying to resurrect and connect with indigenous people who somehow are able to preserve the pre-contact culture, the songs, the art forms, the dancing, the language, the plant matters, oh, and the altered states of consciousness as well, which is something near and dear to my heart as well.
Oh, wow. So have you heard of breathwork?
No, I'm involved. I'm not a shaman, and I've you know, except for the 1960s where I did imbibe in a lot of altered states of consciousness and different psychotropic elements. Mm-hmm. So I've experienced that. But from an academic standpoint, I'm working with a gentleman who's written, I'm co-authoring a book, an enormous book that's going to be communicating the validity of Native American shamanism and altered states of consciousness, and talking about the scientific proof and the scientific validity of these types of modalities in transforming and healing one's psyche, one's body, etc.
And so, that's fantastic.
We've been working on this. Yeah, we've been working on this for several years now, but now it's in draft, and so. Fortunately, I have an opportunity to sort of further this discussion and demonstrate to my colleagues that there really is something to this. It's not just simple fantasy or silliness or even magic. It's a modality. It's a strategy that is demonstrable and actually works in many different ways, sort of to harness the supernatural. How's that?
Yes. Yeah, I can testify that it did just so for myself to help move me forward in my life. I was very stuck when I came to breathwork.
And there are other videos and other information online about this. there was a scientific study. They took, I think it was something like a dozen people who were sick as hell in America. Some of them dying, others that were, as you call it, stuck and had tremendous psychological and health related problems. They flew them over to Brazil and, you know, out there in the jungle. They established a number of shamans there, and the shamans used all of their, efforts to see what they could do in about a week or two's time, 2 weeks' time, to transform these people and get them unstuck. And over half of them were healed miraculously.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So I'm a believer.
Were they using ayahuasca?
They were using ayahuasca. They were using many different strategies. Many different strategies, not only ayahuasca, but others as well. And certainly not all of them, because some of them were literally terminally ill, had particular diseases that were, you know, almost at the end of their lives. But I would say over half, I think it was 60 or 70% of them, came back healed, transformed psychologically and physiologically.
Yeah, it makes me wonder if the people that were terminal, had they stayed perhaps longer, if
right,
maybe they could have had their lives saved.
Exactly. So, and I do find that even from my conventional religion, I'm Catholic, I'm a Jewish Catholic, believe it or not, that oxymoron is interesting. But as I continue to study and learn and listen, I get more and more of an understanding of a, you know, sort of a global perspective, almost a timeless perspective on how people in general are united and have similar concerns, both theologically, spiritually, and almost ontologically, you know, from the standpoint of trying to grapple with just living, being able to enjoy life, be fruitful, and do things that are sustainable in this world. I just think that it's fascinating. And I think we're at an interesting juncture, and you've probably recognized this, that I think people often are wanting to sort of disconnect with the more highly technological and get back to the roots of the land.
Yes, there's a large movement. I know just even in North America, the United States, I'm among them. I yearn for living completely off grid, growing my own food, building earth-friendly housing. I'm like, I really want to do that at my core. And I think van life was like a step towards that direction.
Definitely. Well, I burned through your second segment. I'm going to have to shut up in the third segment so I can let you do more than talking. This has never happened. This has never happened before, but I took over our program with you and I. But I'm going to let you speak.
I think it's all great and organic, like you said.
Yes, and tell your tale. Let's see you in the flip-flop, gang. Hi, guys and gals. Yep, it's Alan, your wonderful host for the 76th episode of the Rock Art Podcast. We're here with Gloria Brooks, and she's going to talk for this last segment. I'm going to tell you about how she uses rock art and basketry of Native Americans and other items of Native American material culture in teaching her students. Go ahead, Gloria. It's all yours.
Thank you, Alan. Dr. Alan. So this... I love your laugh. It's so great. So I was van camping at Volcanic Tablelands this past October, well, October of 2021. And I passed by the same site where I had met Bill Petrie back in 2018. And I was thinking of starting a van life YouTube channel. And when I came across the petroglyphs, I became deeply inspired to create a video and just show, I also have a K-12 YouTube channel. My K-12 channel on YouTube is called Nature Glows eScience, and Glows is spelled G-L-O-apostrophe-S. Glow is my nickname. And then my van life channel is Nature Glow Adventures. Nature Glow, singular, without the apostrophe S. So I started creating a video of the petroglyphs, and I hadn't done a whole lot of research, so I had to do a lot of editing out of stuff, but I just felt really, I really came alive in that video, and I felt such a connection with the land and the people, and just this deep yearning and desire once again to connect with what was going on through the petroglyphs. And so I also created like a little mini slideshow within the video as well. And, you know, you can check that out on my YouTube channel, Nature Glows eScience, which is my K-12 channel. I hadn't yet created the Van Life channel to put that video up, but I may also put it on the Van Life channel. But from that video, I got really excited because following that same month was the Native American Heritage Month in November. And boom, I was just super excited to create my first curriculum, my first Native American K-12 curriculum for home and school educators, or even people in university, if they see fit, if they see the material fit to use, you know, can use it as well. But I think it took me about 2 weeks to prepare the PowerPoint. I did one main PowerPoint with a student's activity guide, I call it, an accompanying activity guide. And then I rolled in as a resource with the PowerPoint and the study guide. The petroglyph video also goes along with that. They're as a resource. So I put it up on my Teachers Pay Teachers curriculum store as well. So if you want to check that out, that's on Teachers Pay Teachers. You can just look for Nature Glows eScience. But yeah, I just was super excited to finally put feet to what I do best, which is curriculum writing. I've been doing that since I was in college in 1996. And to just move forward with this deep yearning and desire to connect with Native American culture, and also to help be a catalyst to help them in any way I can, you know, to be a servant, wherein, you know, for the last 300 years, you know, they've undergone such suppression. And in my curriculum, I wanted to make it known that, you know, the textbooks, our history textbooks that we still have in so many of our public schools they're just really sugarcoating and not really showing us the true genocide that has happened and the suppression that continues to this day. So I made sure in my research to include links that really uphold the Native Americans and not from a colonial slant. And I found it actually very challenging to find good resources. And I even, you know, I questioned myself. I said, oh man, is this really a good resource? Like, I did find that Smithsonian, I don't know if you'll agree or not, please correct me, but isn't Smithsonian a really good resource for upholding Native American, their true story?
Sure. Absolutely.
Okay, great. Definitely. Phew. Because I reference a lot of their work.
Yeah. How do you use rock art or rock art imagery in your curricula?
All right, so let me just look at the slideshow here. All right, so on slide four, Native American monumental artwork examples, I have beautiful imagery that I got from Creative Commons, thankfully. Land art mounds, rock or cave art, petroglyphs, and pictographs. So I just went on Creative Commons, I think it's called, and I found images, like the best images that I could find. I put them in the slideshow, and I made sure to give proper credit where credit was due. So I do reference that mainly in that one slide. I'm looking through now. mainly what I did was clothing and pottery in this first slideshow.
Yeah.
But I did make sure to reference petroglyphs as well. But then I have two parts to this curriculum. I also have a shorter lesson plan for teachers that just want something short and quick, where they go on the internet and gather the resources that I give them links to. So I do use my petroglyph video as a resource in that shorter Native American unit study curriculum. And a unit study is a topical study. And in this case, the unit study is focused on the Native Americans' art.
How long is your video of the petroglyphs?
Let's see. I think it's like 7 minutes long. It's short.
Very short.
I kept it. I did a lot of editing because I wanted to keep it succinct. And I mean, I make sure I do a tight job with my editing, for sure.
That's great. Fantastic. And what's the takeaway here, both for the teacher and for the student? What do they garner? What do they get? What's the message that you want to leave with them from your efforts at connecting them to Native, Indigenous, lifeways, cosmology, worldview, etc.?
I would say the deepest message would be, you know, let's wake up as a global unity and reconnect with the land like our Indigenous ancestors did. Let's find a way. You know, our brilliance with technology is extraordinary. I mean, I'm on a computer every day for my work. I'm very grateful.
Right.
But I think that the core value is let's find a way to learn from the Native American culture and tribes, all these different tribes, and the richness that they still have. They've preserved so many of them, all of them, I hope all of them are able to preserve those, that ancient knowledge that they carry with them, and somehow find a way to help us integrate that today so that we can live in more harmony with the earth again, because we are way out of balance globally. Most of humanity we're so out of balance. I'm out of balance. I so desperately want to get into balance. Like, you know, I feel like I'm running in slow motion. Like I just can't get there fast enough. Like,
I think what's interesting about the way in which you're working and I'm working is that they're complementary. You're working from trying to attempt to educate, inspire, transform, and sort of persuade others to live in balance with the earth. And what I've tried to do is to sort of, because I don't know who I am, whatever, but sort of this divine communication, is to have as my ministry some way to effectively help Native people to preserve their culture and in some cases conserve or protect or educate others about Native culture, and also provide an opportunity for Native people to sort of integrate, a platform to showcase their talents, their background, their talents, their education, their life ways, their dancing, their basketry, whatever, and minister to them, help them overcome some of the financial challenges they may face, and see if there might be ways to partner with them to assist them in preserving their culture and protecting their knowledge. How's that?
Yes. Awesome. Absolutely.
Does that make any sense?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So it's a little different. So for instance, I had an opportunity to spend 4 years working with the Kawaiisu people. They're around the corner there in the Tehachapis and also in the Western Mojave Desert, not far away. And we put out a book called The Handbook of the Kawaiisu. And one of the reasons we did this book was because the anthropologist and the archaeologist, for that matter, kept reminding us that these people were extinct and that we didn't know anything about them.
Oh, wow. Said, oh, my goodness.
I said, that's not really right, is it? So I said, first of all, they're not extinct. There's more of them today than there was in the past, thousands. And additionally, when I put the bibliography together, I think I ended up with 610 references on Kawaiisu culture. So there's a few things written about them.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. And so so we had this lushly illustrated book that had a lot of color photographs and covered the stem to stern about what we might want to know about the Kawaiisu. And we had it win the Governor's Award for historic preservation. Wow. And then we took all the different threads of the Kawaiisu and brought them together to Sacramento to have the award recognized.
Oh, that's extraordinary work.
Yeah, we expanded the museum into Tehachapi, doubled its size. And we had a wing dedicated to the book and to the Kawaiisu exclusively. And it was a portrait of their rock art, their basketry, their weaponry, their life ways, their culture, their language, their people. And it's all in this new wing that doubled the size of this older building and preserves their culture. So there we go.
I was just in Tehachapi recently with my boyfriend, and yes, he showed me the reservation.
Yes.
And would that be what's their name again? Kawaiisu?
Kawaiisu. Now, there's a museum in Tehachapi that's on the, there. It was originally a 1930s library, I believe. It's in that building. And it's a smaller edifice, but as I said, it was doubled in size. And I think if you go there, you'll get to see this particular expression of what we've tried to accomplish in terms of a portrait of Kawaiisu culture.
Yes, I want to go. We're planning to go back. We wanted to hit the bakery, so we're going to hit the museum too.
Yes, Cohen's, right? Yes, the famous bakery there.
Yes. It was closed on the day we arrived. We were brokenhearted. Yes,
exactly. I think we've done our deed. We have communicated a bit about understanding indigenous culture and trying to twin it with some sort of competence to share with teachers and students.
Yes.
And
superb.
And this little interaction with Gloria Brooks has been amazing. Thank you for being our guest scholar.
Thank you so much.
And that's it, gang. See you in the flip-flop.
Thanks for listening to the Rock Art Podcast with Dr. Alan Garfinkel and Chris Webster. Find show notes and contact information at www.arcpodnet.com/rockart. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sharing this podcast with your family and friends. This episode was produced by Chris Webster from his RV traveling the United States, Tristan Boyle in Scotland, DigTech LLC, Cultural Media, and the Archaeology Podcast Network, and was edited by Rachel Roden.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.